Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Moed Katan Daf Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 6 lines from the top of Daf Tes. In effect, we're continuing with the topic that we ended off our previous shiur with, which dealt with the Mishnah's prohibition of having marriages take place during the holiday. On the side of the Gemara, you will notice we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, because as you look ahead in the Gemara, you will also notice triangles that appear, and they appear in two different directions. So in our note on the side, we've written, Mokor v'hoichacha de'ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. We're going to present a source, and in the course of the discussion, proofs that we are not to mix joy with joy. In other words, if it's the holiday and the pasuk says v'somachta b'chagecha, you're supposed to be joyful on the holiday, through the holiday, because of the holiday, one is not to engage in a, we'll call it, competitive joy, that of a wedding. So that if you were to have a wedding during the holiday, you would have competing sources of joy, and that is to be avoided. When the Gemara presents an inverted triangle, in other words, in our markings where we invert the triangle, they represent dechios, rejections of whatever we were saying before that point. So you'll have a give and take style of Gemara. Ha'hoichocha yavoi mikach. Later, the proof will come from the following. Sheyesh yitur kro hamesaper al hazman shechonchu beis hamigdash bizman shlom hamelech. There be an extra expression scripturally regarding the time that the beis hamigdash, the holy temple, the beis hamigdash in Yerushalayim, was built and consecrated in the time of King Solomon. Shechagigu zayin yemei simcha lifnei sukkos davka veloi bechafifa im Sukkos. They observed a 7-day rejoicing period honoring the building, the newly built Beis HaMikdash, and that joy period, that week of festivities was deliberately established before Sukkos, the holiday of Sukkos. In other words, the Beis HaMikdash dedication took place during the week preceding Sukkos, and no overlap. The fact that there was no overlap shows us that you cannot combine one type of simcha with another type of simcha, one source of simcha with another source of simcha. And this, again, when we speak about not overlapping or joining simchas together, this is in the context where one of the simchas is the holiday simcha. Our Gemara. Ude'ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha menolan. From where do we know that concept? And it was, of course, on Daf Ches Amud Beis. You have an arrow. You can find the parallel arrow back on the bottom part, lower part of Ches Amud Beis, where this statement had been made. So where do we know this from, that you don't mix ma'arvin, mix together one joy with another? So the Gemara answers, we bring a posuk. The posuk is 4 lines. Vayas Shlomo Beis Ahi es Hachag v'chol Yisrael imo kahal godol. And it was in that time that he made a festivity with all of the Jewish people, a large assembly. Milovoi Chamos Adach HaMitzrayim. These are two extremes, the geographic extents of Eretz Yisrael from Lavoi Chamos until Nach HaMitzrayim. Lifnei Hashem Elokeinu Shivas Yomim v'Shivas Yomim Arbo Osor Yom. There were 7 days of Beis HaMikdash Simcha, and there were 7 days of Sukkos Simcha, a total of 14 days. The Im Isa, the Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, If it were so that you could join or combine simchas, ibayale lamintar ad hachag, he should have waited till the holiday itself. And Tosfos points out this would have been greatly advantageous for the public. So as not to have people lose out so many work days. So if one could ma'ariv simcha b'simcha, so there would have been, of course, a combination, so that they would have 1 week of simcha dedicated to both the Beis HaMikdash consecration and the holiday. So that would be the proof that you cannot have them overlap. The Gemara rejects this. V'dilma, mintar lo natrinan. Maybe we don't. Now here we must use the Rashi. V'dilma mintar lo natrinan nisuin ad haregel. Maybe we don't delay marriages until the holiday. Ki hechi dilo notar Shlomo. Just like Shlomo didn't wait. Avol I misrami le ovid. But if it would work out like that, that let's say someone met their match shortly before the holiday, so it would work out that the marriage would come out on the holiday, let it be. So let's read that line again. Vidilma mintar lo natrinon. Maybe we don't hold off on the marriage until the holiday. However, vehecho de isrami avdina. But where it just works out like that, we could have them overlap and combined. So the Gemara says, it responds, if it were mutter to combine simcha with simcha, then going back to the Beis HaMikdash, it should have lishure purta. He should have left a little bit over, a little bit of the Beis HaMikdash unbuilt until the holiday, and then when the holiday came, they would have the joy of the completion of the Beis HaMikdash combined with the holiday. Rashi says on the first narrow line, "Ihachi deichad de'im ikri le ovid." If it were so that it was a possibility that if it would overlap, you could do that, then iboyale lishuri bebinyan anaregel. Then Shlomo HaMelech should have left over the building, the completion of the building until the holiday, so that they would actually work out, like we said before, if they would work out to be together, so they would work out to be together. The Chanukah Sabayas, the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, together with the Simcha of Sukkis. So the Gemara says that is not proof that you cannot have them overlap. It could be like this, that shiurei binyan beis hamikdash lo mishai rinon, that it's not right, it's not proper to delay any aspect of beis hamikdash building, so that you can't. There can't be a question on Shlomo Melech, why didn't he leave over part of the building? Because it's simply not something that you're allowed to do. However, when it comes to marriages, if it would work out that they would overlap, maybe it could be. The Gemara says that's not the end of the story. That, and rather, if it were possible to overlap, regarding the Shlomo HaMelech and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, if Simchas could be joined together, then granted, the basic Beis HaMikdash structure, you cannot delay whatsoever. However, the Amokalya Orev, these were metal, sharp metal plates that were placed in a vertical position on the top of the Beis HaMikdash to keep Orev, this type of bird, keep these Orev birds away. They wouldn't be able to settle to sit on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. So he should have, that we'll call it the final touch, that should have been left over till the holiday, and at that point, then they would consecrate the Beis HaMikdash and have the Simcha of Sukkis combined. But he didn't do that. The Gemara says that's no proof. Amakalya Orev, the issue of those metal plates, the anti-bird devices, Tzorech Binyan Havayasu, it's part of, it's needed for the benefit of the Beis HaMikdash. it might not be actual stones and mortar, but nevertheless, it's to preserve the sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash. So we had these extra plates added to the top. So since it's Tzorech Binyan HaBayis, it's not something that you would be allowed to delay. So we don't have a source yet of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. The Gemara answers, Ella, Midameyaser Kra. There's an extra expression, Miyaser from the word Yeser, Yoser, extra Kra, extra scriptural point, reference. Michti, let's look into this. Ksiv, Arba Asor Yom. The Pasuk says that they experienced a joy for 14 days. In other words, from the week before Sukkot was Beis HaMikdash joy, and the holiday of Sukkot, holiday joy, 14 days of Chag. Well, Shivas Yomim, Vishivas Yomim Lomali, why does the Pasuk have to itemize as it did, 7 days and 7 days, as we saw above in the last of the narrow lines of the Gemara? You saw Shivas Yomim repeated twice. In other words, you don't need the pasuk for simple arithmetic. Everyone knows that if once you say 14 days, so 7 and 7 is equals 14. So when the pasuk says they had joy for 14 days, that should be enough. Shema mino, so the Gemara points out, we can conclude from this that the Shivas Yomim tells me hani l'chud v'hani l'chud, that they must be kept separate. In other words, even where they would work out to have been close in time, they cannot overlap. They have to be separate. 7 days of Beis HaMikdash Simcha and 7 days of holiday. So you see that when it comes to holiday-related simchas, that it cannot be combined with something else. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, Shana Shechonchu Beis HaMikdash, the year that the Beis HaMikdash was dedicated, Ochlu B'Yom Kippur. Kechelik Mechagigas Chanukas HaMikdash. They ate on Yom Kippur Day. And as everyone knows, Yom Kippur is the primary day of fasting in the Jewish calendar. And in fact, eating on Yom Kippur carries with it a very severe penalty, a punishment of Kores. Yet, that year, they ate on Yom Kippur. The Beis HaMikdash festival was the week before Sukkot, as we've just said. And Sukkot is on the 15th of Tishrei. So if you work back a week before that, so you have the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th of Tishrei being involved with Beis HaMikdash-related Simchas. So from the 8th of Tishrei onwards, they were eating and rejoicing. Well, Yom Kippur, as you probably know, is on the 10th of Tishrei. Well, they were eating then on the 10th of Tishrei as part of the week of Beis HaMikdash festivities, which started on the 8th of Tishrei, culminating with the onset of Sukkot. So the Gemara continues. Omar of Parnach, Omar of Yochanan, Oysa Shana Loi Osu Yisrael Es Yom HaKippurim. That year they didn't observe Yom Kippur. V'hoyu Doyagim V'oimrim. They were concerned, they were worried, and said, Shemo Nishaivu Soinem Shisrael Kloya. The expression Soinem Shisrael is a euphemism. Literally it means the enemies of Israel, but it's a reference to the Jewish people themselves, that for having not observed Yom Kippur, maybe they are deserving of elimination. Kloya means elimination. Yotzo Baskol V'yomer Lehem, a heavenly voice came forth and announced, Kulchem Mezumonim L'chaye Ho'olam Haba. You are all destined to be members or have receive a portion of the world to come. In other words, a very positive announcement. They are not worthy, they're not deserving of destruction, of Kores. My Dorosh, what did they expound upon in order to conclude this very far-reaching conclusion of not observing Yom Kippur? Omru kal v'chomer. They use kal v'chomer logic. Uma mishkan she'en kedushas oylam. mind you, the Mishkan, which is not of a of permanent sanctity. The Mishkan was a structure. It was basically a temporary type structure. The ultimate Beis HaMikdash being established in Jerusalem as a permanent source of sanctity in this world. So the Mishkan was not Kedushas Olam. It was not of a permanent nature. The Korban Yochid, Doiche Shabbos, the Isur Skila, and in the week of, or the days leading up to the working of the Mishkan, we'll call it the Chanukas HaMishkan, the sanctification, the dedication of the Mishkan period. During that period, the heads of the tribes offered personal sacrifices. These, you can see, are featured in Parshas Noso. Each Nosi, each head of the tribe, would bring his own gift, we'll say, sacrificial gift to the Mishkan. And that was done. And it's a private korban. Generally speaking, we know that private korbanos are not brought on Shabbos. And yet, in that case of the Mishkan dedication, they brought their private korbanos on Shabbos, and Shabbos is a more serious day in terms of its violation than Yom Kippur. Shabbos carries with it a stoning penalty, or skila. So the Mishkan, which is of a temporary nature, and these light-level sacrifices overruled the very powerful Shabbos. Mikdash, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, the Kedushas HaKedushas Olam, it has permanent sanctity. The Korban Sibor and the sacrifices that were brought during that week of Beis HaMikdash dedication were public sacrifices. They call them a stronger type sacrifice. The Yom HaKippurim Donish Kores and Yom Kippur, which is a lower level severity than Shabbos, it's only punishable by Kores and not by Skila, low Kol Shekein, then all the more so it can be, Yom Kippur can be overruled by the Beis HaMikdash festivities. So the Gemara asks, if that logic is so tight, Elo Amai Hoyudoyagim, so what were they worried about? The Gemara answers, Hosam, in the case of the Mishkan, Tzorech Gavoyab. There, what was violated, where Shabbos was violated, so to speak, was in the context of the offering of sacrifices. Hochot Tzorech Hedyot. Tzorech Gavoyab means something of a divine, of a heavenly nature. So that's something we can understand internally, that it can overpower Shabbos. However, Hocha, in the case of their eating on Yom Kippur, Tzorech Hedyot, it was their own personal pleasure, not something of a purely divine nature sacrificial offering, but it involved also personal eating pleasure. Maybe that does not overrule Yom Kippur. So that is what they were worried about. Let's read this line again. Hasam tzorech gavoa, hocha tzorech hedyot. Hocha nami, mevid levdu, mecho lo nichlu, v'lo lishdu. So, when it comes to the Yom Kippur issue and the consecration of the Beis HaMikdash, you know what? They should have had their, let's say, festivities. That's mevid levdu, but not eaten. In other words, as Rashi says, they should have offered the public sacrifices that they did during that week, but not eaten and drinking and having eaten and drank. But let's go over this last point again. The Gemara had asked, what were they worried about if they had such a great type of logic, the Kal V'chomer logic? So the Gemara answered that in the case of the Mishkan, they were involved with, true they violated Shabbos, but it was with korbanos, spiritual activity. However, here in the case of the Beis HaMikdash, it was personal type pleasure, it was their eating and drinking. And maybe that's not enough reason to violate Yom Kippur. So if you're going to ask, why were they worried? That's what they were worried about. So the Gemara asks, why did they have to behave that way? Hochanami, we're reading this again. Hochanami mevid levdu mechalonechlu velishtu. In the case of the Beis Hamikdash, let them behave like they did in the case of the Mishkan and not have anything to worry about. Let them have the doing the mevid levdu. Let them offer their sacrifices and not eaten and drank. And had they behaved that way, so then there would have been no source of worry. So why did they get themselves involved with something that was problematic? The Gemara answers, Ein simcha below achilo shtia. You can't achieve true joy without the eating and the drinking. You notice something, an interesting, it's a side point over here, but it's a central theme to Judaism. And that is, we are not a we'll call it an ascetic religion, where we, when it comes to personal pleasures, that we forswear them for the sake of asceticism. Rather, we are interested, we strive to combine the physical with the spiritual, and that the true simcha, joy, and here we're talking about the joy of the dedication of the Beis Hamikdash, that cannot be achieved without the combination of the physical eating and drinking. So they knew that very well, that in order to achieve the simcha, they had to also eat and drink, but nevertheless, it was on their minds that maybe there was something to worry about here, but they eat and drank on Yom Kippur. As we go on in the Gemara, we have another marking, and on the side we have under the Mivneh heading the double underline, Hoychochois proof, Shemalochois Hakshuros Lechanukas HaMishkon, Ubeis HaMikdash Dochu Shabbos V'Yom Kippur. Proofs that these activities involving the dedication of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash would overrule Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Gemara, Umishkan Dedochi Shabbos Minolon. We had Kalvachomer before that used the Mishkan as a jumping off point. Well, how did they know that? How did they know that the Mishkan can overrule through the sacrifices of the Nesiim the observance of Shabbos? So the Gemara goes through a number of stages before it comes to an actual answer. He lema midichtiv. If you'll say it's from the pasuk that says Bayom Horishon uVayom Hashvi'i, the psukim in Parshas Noso describe each day the different head of tribe, the gift and sacrifices that he brought. So that we're talking about these private sacrifices that were brought on Shabbos, and it mentions on the first day, the second day, and it mentions also the seventh day. So Yom HaShvi'i sounds like on Shabbos, the Nasi that was assigned to that day brought his personal sacrifice. That would show that Shabbos can be violated for the purposes of Mishkan dedication. Because otherwise, personal sacrifices can never be brought on Shabbos. The Gemara says that is not proof. Dilma Shvi'i l'korbanos. Maybe Shvi'i there is a reference to the seventh day of sacrifice offering, not the seventh day of the week. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. Omar Kro, there's another pasuk. It says, B'yoim Ashteosor Yoim. Ashteosor means the 11th day. But there's an extra word in the pasuk. It says, after Ashteosor, it says Yom. The pasuk begins by saying, B'yoim Ashteosor Yom. What do I need the second Yom for? So we learn from this, Ma Yoim Kuloi Rotsuf, just like a day is a continuity of 24 hours. Rotsuf means a continuation. A day is a solid, single continuum of time. Af Ashtei Asar Kulon Rotsufin. So too, the 11 days that the Pasuk makes reference to, the 11th day, are 11 continuous days. The Gemara asks, V'dilma Yomim Horu'uyin, as we asked before, maybe it means the 11 days that are fit to have a sacrifice brought, and that would exclude Shabbos. Shabbos is not a day that's fit to have a personal sacrifice. K'siv Krachrino, there's another pasuk, B'yoim Shneimosor Yoim. Now here again you have the repeat of the word Yom. Ma yoim kulo ratzuf, just like a day is a one solid continuum of time. Af shneimosor yoim kulon ratzufim. So to the 12 days are a continuous 12 days, including Shabbos, without any breaks in that continuum of 12. The Gemara says, "V'dilma hochanami yomim haruyin." Maybe this pasuk also means on the 12th of the fit days, a sacrifice was brought by that head of the tribe. The Gemara says, "If that were true, im kain trei kroi lomali, why do I have to have twice an extra yom to convey the idea, the same idea of days that are fit?" So the fact that you have a repetition of the word yom, that comes to show me, that extra yom comes to show me that it means a continuum of time, and in the case of the 12 days, it's a continuum of 12 consecutive days, which of course will include a Shabbos. U'mikdash d'doicha yom ha-kippur min'olan. And as far as the mikdash overriding Yom Kippur, where do we learn that from? I'leimah mi'lichtiv arba osar yom. If you'll say that they celebrated 14 days, as we saw above in the pasuk, V'dilma yomim horuyin. Maybe it's a reference to the days that are fit, the available days, which would exclude Shabbos. The Gemara answers, Gomar yoim yoim mehasam. There is a gezerah shavah of the word yom that we saw in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, where we saw the permission for violating Shabbos. So, too, by the case of the Beis HaMikdash, you find the word yom, so that, too, would indicate the right to violate Yom Kippur. You notice we have to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text a double star. You can see where that appears above. And this is a quote from there. Yotza baskel v'yomro lohem kulchem mizumonim l'chayo ilum haba. A heavenly voice announced to the generation of King Solomon, where they were rejoicing in the building of the Beis HaMikdash involving their violation of Yom Kippur, that they are all apportioned a portion in the world to come. Uminalon de Ochiluhu, where do we know this from, that they were forgiven for having eaten on Yom Kippur? The Tani Tachlifa. We have a Tachlifa teaches a Tanaic source, which features a posuk from Melachim Aleph Perches, and the posuk is broken down into its respective parts, and you'll see in the as we will open with the reading of the pasuk itself, and then the underlining that you see in the Gemara are the respective parts of the pasuk. And from the pasuk, we see that there was a forgiveness, as was reflected by the announcement of the heavenly voice. The pasuk says, "B'yom hashmini shalach es ha'om vayivorchu es hamelech vayichul aleihem smechim v'tuvei lev al kol hatoiva asher osa Hashem leDavid avdo liYisrael amoi." And on the eighth day, the day after Sukkot, the public was sent home in a state of joy. And we explain, La'olehem, they were sent home, La'olehem. What does that mean? Literally, it means to their tents. Shahochu matsu nisheim betara. We've seen in a previous Gemara that the word oihel means one's wife. So it means that they went home and they found their wives that were in a state of ritual purity, and that husband and wife could be together in intimacy. Smechim shinenu miziv hashchina. They had simcha from the fact that they had enjoyed the divine glow, the divine spirit that was present at that dedication. V'tuve lev shekol echad ve'echad nis'abro ishtoi beben zohar. As a result of their return to their wives and the intimacy that followed, their wives became impregnated with male children. Al kol hatoiva, and this is what is important for us right now. Shiotza basko v'yomalehem kulchem zom l'chaya olam haba. They were happy and satisfied with all of the toiv, all of the favor that they received, and that includes the heavenly voice announcing that they are members of the world to come, indicating free of sin. The pasuk says, "L'David avdoi u'Yisrael amoi." This we saw in the pasuk that was found at the beginning of the Tanaic source. Bishlamo Yisrael amoi. The pasuk had says that they, all of the joy, all of the favor that Hashem did to David and to the Jewish people. So the toiva to Yisrael Amo, to the Jewish people, was the Ochlu Avon Yom Kippurim, that the sin of Yom Kippur was forgiven. What's the favor shown to King David? And it should be pointed out, of course, that King David was no longer alive at this point. So what's the toiva shown to him? The favor shown to him. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Mechilas David Alavoin Basheva B'Shas Hachnosas Ha'oron Leveis HaMikdash. We will be learning about the forgiveness that Hashem granted David HaMelech for the... the questionable episode of his having married Bas Sheva, and it's not appropriate for us to get into the details of that right now, but one should just realize that David HaMelech's taking of Bas Sheva was done, let's say, under somewhat questionable circumstances. To say that it was an outright sin and all might not be the most accurate presentation of that topic, but it was done under questionable circumstances, and hence David HaMelech lived with a certain sense of doubt that maybe he will be held accountable. And where do we see his forgiveness? And that we'll see over here. The Gemara is asking, David Avdo Maihi, and we have an answer. It's a long answer. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, B'shal Shebike Shlomo, Lahachnis Oroin Lamikdash. At the time that Shlomo HaMelech wanted to bring the holy ark that contained the Aseres HaDibros into the Beis HaMikdash, miraculously the gates remained sealed shut. Omar Shlomo Esrim V'Arba Runonois V'Lo Nena. He said 24 different types of praise, and he was not answered. Posach v'yomar, he then said, Su'u sh'orim roshechem, v'chulei, that's from Tehillim Perek Chovdalid, v'lo nenet. And he recited that psalm, and he was not answered with that either. Kevan sh'omar, when he finally said, Hashem Elokim, al toshev p'nei mishichecha, zochron l'chazdei dovid avdecha, remember the kindness, or the mitzvos, the chaste David Avdecha, workings and the piety of King David, miyad nene, with the mentioning of David HaMelech, that resulted in the gates opening. Ba'oisishah nebchu pnei soine David kishule kedera. David HaMelech had not a few enemies, detractors. Well, at that point, when the gates opened, simply at the mention of David HaMelech, all of his detractors turned out to be like the bottoms of pots. They will say, blackened with shame. V'yodu ha'koil, shemoch ha'loch, reshboch ha'loysa oven. And everyone then realized, knew that the Almighty forgave David HaMelech for that sin. Rabbi Yonason ben Amsoi, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, Tonu Parshas Nedarim Bei Reb Shimon Ben Yochai, have two gentlemen mentioned here, Reb Yonason and Reb Yehuda. They studied Parshas Nedarim, means Maseches Nedarim, the tractate of Nedarim, by Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. We should take note of the fact that we have a long Maisa, notice the long marking, and on the side of the Gemara we have a Nosei Mivne heading. The bow tie appears, one appears here, and the next will appear on Omid Beis. These are Shnei Maisim, two incidents, Talmidim Shaholchu Milifnei Rabbam Ladarkom. Two incidents where what's common is you have students that were learning by their Rebbe, by their teacher, and they then went home. They departed from their Rebbe. So we have two incidents that's the theme. We continue now in the Gemara. So we have Rav Yonah's son Ben Amsoi and Rav Yudah Ben Gerim that were leaving Rav Shmuel Bar Yochai. Iftar minei b'urta. They took leave of him. They said goodbye in the evening. And the next morning, l'tzafra hodr v'kom iftari minei. The next morning, they went back to him again to take leave. Omar Lahus, Rav Shmuel Bar Yochai says to his students, "Valav iftarisu mini b'urta. Did you not take leave of me yesterday evening?" Omru lei. So they said back, "Limadetanu Rabenu. You taught us Talmud Shniftam Rabbi v'lon b'isoir. A student that takes leave of his Rebbe, which of course is an act of honor to the Rebbe, and yet he stays over that same night in the same town. Tzorich liftar mimenu pam acheres. He has to take leave of him a second time. Shenemar, and the posuk that's quoted is here, and of course this is the connection to the sugya before. If you were wondering what in the world is the connection between this and the Gemara before, here it is. Shenemar says, "Bayom hashmini shalach es ha'om vayivorchu es hamelech." And on the eighth day of the holiday, that happened to be the 22nd of Tishrei. That's Shmini Atzeres. The eighth day, the Sukkot we may have mentioned before was a 7-day holiday, but it's really a 7 days in plus the eighth day, which is Shmini Atzeres, which takes you to the 22nd of the month of Tishrei. And the Pasuk indicates that in the time of Shlomo Melech, he sent them home. Uksiv, ubiyoyim esrim v'shloish l'chaydish eshvii shalach esam. And on the 23rd of the 23rd day of the 7th month, which is Tishrei, he sent them home. But he said it's on the 22nd he sent them home. Elomi kan, rather from here, we learn the Talmud haniftar me'raboi v'lon boi so'ir, a student that takes leave of his Rebbe and stays that night over in the town, tzorach liftar mimenu pam acheres. He has to take leave of him again the next morning. Omar le librei, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says to his own son, he says, "Bnei Adam halalo anoshim shel tzurahem." These men, and he's referring to his students, they are wise men. Zil gabeon deliv rechuch. Go to them and get a blessing from them. Ozal. So the son went, and now you see we have a bracketed section. The brackets are explained on the side. There's a note, a starred note. Achrei asograyim, atamidim poinim elov. In other words, after the brackets, you'll see that the students of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, they turn to the son. They turn to Rav Shimon's son. Aval b'socha asograyim, hu moitzei oisa malim umiashim shtei siris v'psukim. Within the brackets, there you don't see contact between them and the son. Rather, they're involved with resolving what appears to be contradictions in psukim. So, as far as the superstructure of this particular incident is, the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai sent his son for their bracha, and he will receive their attention after the bracketed section. Another a marking that we should note is there's the triangle, and on the side of the Gemara, it highlights Rabbonim Shisholchu Bneim Lizborech Mipi Tamidem. Stories where rabbis send their own sons to their students to receive a bracha. So now that we've mentioned the superstructure, we can read the Gemara straight through. So the son of Rav Shmuel Bar Yochai was sent by his father, Rabbi Shimon, to Rabbi Yonason and Rabbi Yudah to receive a bracha. Ozal, he went. Ashkachinu, we're a second line from the bottom of the Gemara. Ashkachinu, the Karamu Kroi Ahadodi. He found them raising contradictions in Psukim. Ksiv. On the one hand, the Pasuk says, and by the way, we should point out this marking, the house marking. This is their involvement with resolving seeming difficulties in Psukim. So he finds them raising Ramu Kroy Adodi. They raised psukim one against the other. Ksiv, one pasuk says, Paleis magal raglecho v'chol durochecho yikoinu. Paleis has to do with weighing or measuring, balancing. It says, balance your ways or measure your ways. Uksiv orechayim pentefales. Another pasuk says that when it comes to living life, don't measure things. So are we expected to weigh things one against the other or not? The Rashi explains, Paleis maga raglecho, kloma shku mitzvahs, v'ayin bohen, eza mitzvah gedela v'aseh hagdola. When you have an opportunity to perform mitzvahs, you should weigh, figure which mitzvah is a greater mitzvah and do the greater. If you have a choice of this or that, do the greater one. The other pasuk, Rashi continues, Uksiv orechayim pentefales, demashma kol mitzvah shetovo liyodcho aseh oso. Any mitzvah that comes your way, do it, ben gedola, ben ktana, ve'al taniach ktana, ve'al gedola. The implication is that don't leave aside a lesser mitzvah in order to do a greater mitzvah. Whatever you have a chance to do right now, do it. So how do we resolve these two seemingly contradictory psukim? The Gemara says, lo kasha. There is no contradiction. Kan b'mitzvah shef shel asosei adei achirim. One case represents a mitzvah that others could also do it. If you have a situation where you have all of the mitzvahs that you're confronted with, if you don't do it, someone else will do it. So then, measure, calculate. You should choose the greater mitzvah and let your friend do the lesser one. We continue on the top of Omid Beis. Kan if you have a situation where there are a couple mitzvahs on the horizon, lesser ones, greater ones, but you're the only one that will be able to do these mitzvahs. So in a case like that, you don't start making cheshbonis and measuring things, but the first mitzvah that comes to you, do it. Even if it's the lesser mitzvah, do it. There's a Tosfos at the top. Kan b'mitzvah she'efshir la'asos yadei achirim. Asiyas mitzvah odif. The performance of the mitzvah is greater. She'ein mafsikin afilu l'Rav Shimon ben Yochai la'oise suke v'lulav. Take someone like even someone as great and as given over to the study and dedication of Torah, which is the greatest mitzvah. However, even he would have to mafsik, would stop his Torah learning to perform the mitzvah of sukkah, the mitzvah of lulav, even though these are considered lesser mitzvahs. Let's go back to the Gemara. Hodr yasvi v'komei bayalu. They then sat and questioned another, raised another question. Ksiv Yikora hi mipninim v'chol chafotzecha lo yishvu ba. Torah is greater, is more valuable than anything. Then pninim are a certain type of jewel or pearls, and all of your needs don't compare lo yishvu ba. So now, when looking at this pasuk, you can infer that your needs don't compare to the value of Torah learning. Ha chefse shamayim yishuba, but chefse shamayim, divine needs, so to speak, or requirements. In other words, mitzvos. Mitzvos are chefse shamayim. Those do compare to Torah learning. The see, there's another pasuk that says also in the book of Mishlei. It says, "Kol chafotzim lo yishvu ba, dafilu chefse shamayim lo yishvu ba." Not only your own needs, but even heavenly requirements don't compare to it, to Torah learning, and that would indicate that you should abandon or avoid a mitzvah in order to involve yourself with Torah learning. So, once again, one pasuk indicates that mitzvahs are on par with Torah learning. Another pasuk indicates that no mitzvahs are on par with Torah learning. The Gemara resolves. Kan b'mitzvah she'efshir la'asus ed'echirim. Kan b'mitzvah she'efshir la'asus ed'echirim. If there is a mitzvah that is possible to be done by others, so then Torah learning is preeminent. However, if it's a mitzvah that's not possible to be done by others, then you have to do the other mitzvah. Now, as you can see, the brackets are closed. And by the way, let us correct ourselves, a minor correction, but we cited a Tosfos, possibly out of order. The Tosfos we saw at the top, then the performance of the mitzvah is greater than Talmud Torah, and that would be that Tosfos is more appropriate over here and not where we quoted it. Now, as you can see, the brackets close, and that means that the Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yehuda now turn their attention to the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that has met them. Omru le, my boy is hocha. So they said to the son of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, what are you doing here? Omar lehu. So he answers them, the Omar li Abba, father told me, zil gabayo delivruchucha. Go to them, they should give you a blessing. Omru le, now they issue a blessing. Now the blessing itself has 6 points. We'll read it and then initially be confounded by their words, that it doesn't seem to be a blessing at all. Following these couple lines, the Gemara then has the son going back to his father, complaining that not only did they not bless me, but they were mitzayir me. They caused me pain. And then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai will proceed to answer his son's question and explain each one of their 6 points. So the son asks for a question, Omru Leh, they say to the boy, or they say to the son, Yehei Ravo, Yehei Ravo means Yehi Rotzon, Shetizra Velo Techza, that you should plant and not harvest. Very odd. Ta'ayo Velo Tepuk. That means to bring in and not bring out. Tepuk Velo Tile. Put out and not bring in. Now, before we go on, Rashi explains what the initial understanding of this, before we get to the actual explanation. Rashi, ta'ayo velo tepuk, tepuk velo ta'ayo mashma. This seems to indicate mashma le b'schora. It sounds like something of a commercial nature. Schora is merchandise. Ta'ayo velo tepuk. Bring in and not put out. Shetovi schor velo timkarena. That you'll acquire merchandise and not be able to sell it. In other words, if you imagine a retailer purchasing from a wholesaler but unable to sell it to the public. Tepuk velo tayo, and what in that expression? Shetotzi bischora bemokom acher velo tevieno. That might mean that you might make expenditures for merchandise is somewhere else and not be successful in bringing it in and in acquiring it. Let's go back to the Gemara. Lichrov Besach, the Lesuv Ushpizach. Here we'll just translate that your house shall be destroyed and your inn, your motel, your inn, shall be occupied. Levalbel psurach, your table should be confused. Velo techsi shosuchadatan, you should not see a new year. Very odd blessings. Ki osa legabi avua, when the son came to his father, to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, omale, the son says, lo mibaya de le baruchi lo birchan. Not only did they not give me a blessing, avol tseuri tseuran, but they even caused me pain. We might say they even cursed me. Amarle, my Omru Loch. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, well, what did they say to you? Hochi vachi Omruli. And so the son answers, thusly and thusly. They said, Amarle. So the father says back, Hanoch kulu birchasoninhu. Each one of their points was a bracha. Tizra velo tachzid. That means, toilid bonim, that you should be you should merit having sons, v'loyamusu, and they don't die. So Tizra is to provide the seed and not harvest, meaning and they don't die, they remain alive. Ta'ayo v'lo tepuk, that you'll bring in and not put out. Ta'ayo kalsa, that your sons will merit finding brides, you know, getting married. V'lo limusu benoch delifkun, and that your sons will not die, that they will then be sent away, that the so that they'll become widows and have to leave. Tepuk velotail toilid binsa, you will have tepuk again meant you send out and not bring in. That means toilid binsa, that you'll have daughters, velo yomusu guvrayhu velezru levosach, and that their husbands will not die, and then requiring or necessitating your daughters returning back to you. So you send your daughters out in marriage to others, and their husbands will remain alive. Lechruv besoch velesuv ushpizach. We glance at Rashi. Lechruv besoch bes kivroscha. That your house is a reference to your grave. Lechruv means your grave is destroyed or it's uninhabited, meaning delotomus, that you shouldn't die, elotichya la'urchyamim, but have a long life. So let's go back to the Gemara. Number four again is lechruv besach v'leisav ushpizach. That's the high alma is ushpizach. This world is considered like an inn. So that's Olam Hazeh. Vahu Alma, the world to come, in this case it's a reference to the grave, and the state of death is considered Beisah, it's more permanent. Dichtiv, Kirvom Botemo Le'olam, Al Tikri Kirvom, Elo Kivrom, read it as graves. There, so the Pasuk says, Kivrom Botemo Le'olam, that their graves are their houses forever, it's the permanent house. So what the Talmidim of the Rashim Ruchoy were saying to his son was that your Besach should not be occupied. You shouldn't be in a grave and rather enjoy a long life in Olam Hazeh. Number five, Levalbel Psorach, that your table, Psoros, your table should be confounded. Bibboni Ubinsa, with lots of children. Anyone who has seen homes with many children in them, so it's there's very often a state of confusion that's there, but it's for positive reasons. The number six, Velotech Sishos Sechadatu, you shall not see a new year. What does that mean? Now, there is a concept that's known as Shona Rishona. When a person marries, when he marries his wife, so he's supposed to spend the first year with additional attention toward her. And there are numerous halachas that expand upon that idea. So that's called the new year. So what are they saying to him when he says you shouldn't see a new year? The lotomus insoch, that your wife, the son of Rav Shmuel Bar Yochai, wasn't a little boy over here, he was a married man, and they're wishing him the following, that your wife shall not die. The lotinsiv inso achriti, therefore necessitate your marrying a new wife, and when you marry a new wife, so you have to once again observe that first year, so that you shouldn't have to go through the need to have another new year with your wife, namely that your current wife should enjoy longevity. Rab Shimon ben Chalafta, iftar minei derav. Rab Shimon ben Chalafta left the presence, took leave of Rav. Amar le livrei, Rav said to his son, zil legabei delivruchoch. Go to him, go to Rab Shimon ben Chalafta to receive a bracha. Amar le, so Rab Shimon says, yehe rava delo tevayesh velo tizbayesh. It should be the will of heaven that you shall not embarrass and not become embarrassed. Also Gabi Avua, Omale, my Omaloch, the son comes back to his father and Rav asks, what did he tell you? Omale Milin Baalmahud Omale, he said general things, and there was nothing specific, I didn't hear any real bracha. Omale Birchoch Birchisa de Birchon Kutchabrichli Yisrael Vitona Bo. You don't realize, he says, he blessed you the bracha that the Almighty blessed the nation of Israel and repeated it. Dichtiv, v'chalte machol v'sova V'hilaltem v'chule v'lo yevoshu ami l'oilom v'idatem ki bekerev Yisrael oni v'lo yevoshu ami l'oilom. Instead of getting involved with the translation of the pasuk, just take note of that which we've dashed underline. V'lo yevoshu ami l'oilom, and again v'lo yevoshu ami l'oilom. Twice it's repeated that my nation should not experience embarrassment, and it's repeated twice in the pasuk, indicating that this is what the Almighty blesses the nation of Israel. You can imagine the Almighty is the ultimate source of blessing, and He's blessing them and repeating it, that they should not be involved with embarrassment. The Mishnah taught, V'oise isho tachshiteo, a woman on Cholamoye can involve herself with cosmetics. Tonu Rabbanon. Elu hein tachshitei noshim. Now we're using the word cosmetics, and that's a translation that is, we'll say, a departure from the modern Hebrew word tachshitim. You find the word tachshitim, and not only in modern Hebrew, but in other contexts, you find this in the sense of jewelry, adornments, appurtenances. But here, we're going to focus on cosmetic procedures. So the source tells us, and maybe before we read on in the Gemara, we just glance at the side, Tachshite Noshim, Sugei Ipur. Ipur has to do with makeup, different types of makeup. And Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, Legabi Tipul, Besid B'moin. We'll also analyze, focusing on Rabbi Yehuda's din regarding the depilatory procedure. Tana Rabbanan. Elu hein tachshitei noshim. The following are cosmetic procedures. Kecheles upoikeses umaviros srak al poneha. Kecheles is a type of eye cosmetic. Poikeses involves hairdos, we'll say. Rashi says mechalek is cyril, kind of like parting her hair. And srak is a type of cosmetic that creates, maybe we'll call it rouge. Rashi talks about making her face have a ruddy, reddish color. The Iko Diamri, we go continue in the Gemara. Maveres sakin al poneo shel mato. This would mean a razor, a blade that's used for removing hair from the lower part of her body. Devisu de Rav Chisda mekashto ba'anpi kalsa. Rav Chisda's wife made herself up. Mekashto kishut is to apply cosmetics in the presence of her daughters-in-law. Rashi points out, she was a woman that had married sons. So she had daughters-in-law. So that indicates a certain age. So Rav Chisda's wife was a certain age. I don't know if we'll use the term elderly, but that's all relative to what people call elderly. But she was a woman that was not she wasn't a very young woman. So she was engaged in makeup in front of her daughters-in-law. Yosef Rav Huna bar Chinina kamed Rav Chisda. V'yosef v'ka'amar. Rav Huna was seated in the presence of Rav Chisda, and he said, Lo shanu elo yaldo avol zekeno lo. The halacha of tachshitim, that which we say that a woman is allowed to adorn herself, that's only with regard to a young woman. That's their style. They and that gives them happiness, satisfaction. But older women, that's not their way. It's not normal, so to speak. And Rashi says, "Vehechi abda yishtucha achi de mekashto ha'avi zekena." How can she engage in it? She's older. Amale Rav Chisda shares an insight with his student, with Rav Huna bar Chinina. He says, "Hoelakim." That's an expression of taking an oath. However, it shows a certain sense of we'll say surprise. He says, "Afilu imcha ve'afilu ima de imcha." When it comes to cosmetics, you, even your mother and your grandmother, "Afilu oimedes al kivra," even if she's a woman that's about to die. In other words, she's quite old. She is allowed to make herself up. The Amri and she, people say, Bas shisin kibas shis, l'kol tav lo ra'ata. First of all, the literal translation, a 60-year-old is like a 6-year-old when it comes to the sounds of instruments. Rashi explains, l'kol tav lo ra'ata, pirush kishkush hazug, a clanging of the bell, songs and music at a wedding, just like a young girl, a 6-year-old, she'll run off when she hears music, run to the music. So to a 60-year-old woman, the same thing. There's something in the we'll call it the feminine mystique, where music attracts the women at all ages. And along the same lines, women are always young when it comes to cosmetics. So that if you're saying that the heter of a woman adorning herself is for Yalda, not for Zakena, in the context of cosmetics, there is no such thing as a Zakena. Even a woman who's about to depart from this world, she's 1 foot out of the grave, she will be interested in getting made up. Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo tosud, Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Isha lo tosud b'moyed. A woman should not apply the lime depilatory treatment on the holiday, b'pnei shenivul hu la, because now Rashi explains shenivul hu la, shignai hu la, v'nivul b'sid u'mitzta'eres b'sid. There seems to me there are two aspects. This depilatory, first of all, when it's on her, it's ugly. There's a certain different cosmetic procedures they once call like mud packing, where a certain type of mud is applied to a person's face, and eventually it's peeled off and makes the woman look nicer. But when it's on her, so there, first of all, she certainly looks homely, and not only that, but there's also a certain amount of pain, there's tsar from it. Unless you interpret the Rashi that it's through the ugliness that she has the pain, but whatever, Rav Yehuda says that this method, this procedure of seed, of tosud, should not be done because of nivul. It's disgusting. Umoide Rav Yehuda, besid shechila kaplo b'moyed, if it's a short-term treatment, in other words, she can smear this on, and in the course of the holiday itself, she can eventually peel it off, but all within the holiday, within that week of the holiday, so she is allowed to go through this procedure, even though at this moment when she's applying it the first day or two, she experiences discomfort from it. Afterwards, she will be happy. In other words, the ends justifies the means. And the ends in this case is looking more attractive on the holiday. So that's the ends, and that will be a source of course, happiness for the woman, that she'll look nice later on the holiday itself. That justifies the means of applying this treatment on the earlier part of the holiday. So now, what is the theme that we see here? As we said, ends, we look at the ends in order to evaluate the means. If the ends justifies it, so we can go through the means. Umi isle the Rabbi Yehuda high svara. Now we ask, does Rabbi Yehuda accept this method of analysis, meaning to determine matters based on what will be later on? The Hotnan. Have we not taught in the following Tanaic source, Rabbi Yehuda speaks up here, and here before we can go on with the text of the Gemara, we must note that we're focusing in on a concept. We're going to be drawing from a totally unrelated topic, but the concept is what we want to focus on, and it has to do with deciding the current behavior, current method, based on the future. The topic we're going to discuss now has to do with Jewish dealings with Gentiles. The topic is elaborated on quite a bit more in Maseches Avodah Zarah. And when you're dealing with idol worshippers and their holiday time, we, the Jewish people, don't want to be a source of pleasure to idol worshippers around their holiday time, because when they celebrate their holidays, they acknowledge their idols. So, with that background, we read the following source: Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nifroin Mehen, Mitnei Shemetzar. A Jew is allowed to collect debts owed him by idol worshippers on their holidays, because paying debts is something that's unpleasant, and so the goy, the idol worshipper, isn't going to go and thank his deities as a result. And we want to avoid, as we said in our introductory remarks, we want to avoid the idol worshipper thanking his deity. Well, he won't do so when it comes to his paying off his debts to the Jew. Omru lo. So those that disagree with Rabbi Yehuda said to Rabbi Yehuda, how can you allow collecting of debts from idol worshippers on their holidays? Afopisha meitzer achshav, even though initially he feels discomfort, he feels pain that he's parting with his money, sameach liachas man. He is going to be happy later on. And that is enough reason for the fact that let's for illustration purposes, let's say the idol worshipper has a multi-day holiday. So on the first day of his multi-day holiday, he pays off his debt. So as he's shelling out the cash, the money, so he feels a sense of pain. But later on that holiday, he'll feel a sense of satisfaction, of relief that he's debt free, and he'll express his joy and his thanks to his deities. So there is reason to object to what you are saying. What do we see from here? We see that Rabbi Yehuda himself doesn't look at the future in order to determine the present. He judges things based on the immediate situation. And as the idol worshipper is shelling out the debt, he feels pain, and that's enough to legitimize accepting payment from him. But again, to put things in context, the issue is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, halacha is determined by right now. So how, if that be the case, so how can he allow before the Sid treatment, this depilatory treatment, based on the joy experienced later? But right now, it's painful. And it's a holiday. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. So we have triangles, and they introduce, and as you see on the side of the north, Shnei Tshuvas L'Sheila, two answers to this question. Emir Behuda, Be'emes Sefer Hasvara, does Rabbi Yehuda really hold from this analysis? Afabisha Meitzer Ashav Sameach Huli Achar Zman. So Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Hanoch Lehilchus Moyed. Leave aside, in other words, don't raise questions from the source of debt payments to the topic of Chol HaMoed. The Kulu, the entire nature of the holiday, we are allowed to do things. We're allowed to cook and bake on the holiday. Is it pleasant to stand in a hot kitchen, stirring pots, kneading dough, etc.? It's not pleasant. It's not enjoyable. What is enjoyable about that is the ends. It's the result. So when it comes to holiday matters, the whole nature of the holiday is Meitzer Achshav V'Sameach Li'Achar Zman Ninhu. You're cooking and baking now in the hot, sweaty kitchen because of the food that will be ready for your eating later on. So the nature of Chol HaMoed is the joy associated with the holiday is that initial discomfort, pleasure later on. So that's as far as Chol HaMoed or halachas of holidays are concerned. That's their nature. But otherwise, outside the realm of holidays, we judge things by how what is experienced immediately. And hence, when it comes to the collection of debts, at that point the goy is bitzar, and he won't run to his deity. Ravino Omar. Ravino explains that Kusi, the Indian Piron, when it comes to the idol worshipper and paying up of debts, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, is la'olam meitzar. He never has pleasure. This this idea that the Chachamim said that he feels relief later on of being debt-free, not so. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, he always feels a sense of pain in having had to pay out the money. So that as far as the issue of paying from him, that doesn't represent the case of one state of mind now and a changed state later on. We take a look at the Rashi and the wide lines under the Gemara. Kusi, the third of the wide lines under the Gemara, text Kusi lo lemeitzer sheporea, that he's paying out the money. Ulahachi lo islay the Rabbi Hassam, therefore Rabbi there doesn't engage in an analysis of afabisha meitzer sameach, the difference in current and later, because there is no such thing. Avoliel gavi tipol, but with regard to the cosmetic treatment, islay the Rabbi afabisha mitzira achshav smecha leachar zman. In the case of cosmetic treatment, there is this discrepancy between current and future. And in the case of Ali, since later on the holiday she will have joy, that is enough to legitimatize her immediate discomfort. Omer of Yehuda, Benois Yisrael, and since we're in the context of cosmetics and cosmetic treatment, the Gemara elaborates on this. This is not related directly to the issue of holiday procedures, etc., but it's a more general topic which can be applied. Omer of Yehuda, Benois Yisrael, Shigiu lePirkon, Velo Higiu lShanim. Jewish girls, you can have, we'll say, pubic signs, hair growth happening earlier than their chronological age for that to happen. So you can have a young girl, an 8-year-old girl, that the hairs are developing on her body, and that's not something Rashi says boishes akat. That can be a source of embarrassment for them. So what do they do? So we're dealing with with depilatory hair removal. Anios toifles oison besid. The poor of the community will use the lime treatment, and that lime treatment, once applied and then peeled off, hairs are come out with it. Ashiros, wealthier ones, toifles oison besoilus. They have a some type of flower depilatory. Benois Melochim, princesses, b'shemen hamor, shenemar shisha chadosha b'shemen hamor. It's a type of oil of myrrh. My shemen hamor, what is that? Rav Huna bar Chiya Omar Satkis. It's known as Satkis, something that the Gemara knew what it was. Rav Yirmiyah bar Ami Omar, he explains shemen zayis shelo hevi shlish. It's olive oil produced from olives that are not even a third developed. So from these underdeveloped olives, they would be processed, producing an oil that would serve as a depilatory. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anpikinon. Anpikinon is taught in the context of menachas, their meal offerings. Meal offerings had oil applied or added to them, and in those meal offerings, Anpikinon was not allowed. So that type of oil called anpikinon, which was not allowed for meal offerings, what was that? Shemen zayis shelo hevi shlish. It was, in fact, like we just mentioned, it was oil produced from olives that had not been a third developed. V'loma sochen oisoi. Why are these different things smeared on? Shemeshir es haseor u'ma'aden es habosar. Rashi points out that this question of Olamos Sochen Osoi, he says, Akol Hani Komahadir. It's going on all of those things that we mentioned before of Teuflin, that they would apply to them. Why would they do that? Shemeshir es haseor u'ma'aden es habosar. It would remove the hair, and ma'aden es habosar would create a let's say a red complexion, a healthy type complexion. Rav Bevai Havele Barta. Rav Bevai had a daughter, Toflo Aver Aver. He applied to her this a depilatory limb by limb, Shokaba Arba Meazuzi. She became so beautiful that the husband to be offered 400 zuz in order to marry her. Hava Hahu Kusi B'Shivuse. There was an idol worshipper in Rav Bevai's neighborhood. Tavle Barta, he had a daughter. Tafla B'Chalazimna, he applied the depilatory to her entire body in one shot. Umesa, and the girl died. Omar, and he, the Gentile, and here we have an early example of a blood libel, he said, Katlo Bevai Labarti, Rav Bevai is responsible for my daughter's death. Omar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman explains there's a big difference. Rav Bevai, the Shossi Shichra, Rav Bevai was accustomed, he, and it might very well be that in that his daughters as well, were beer drinkers. I know what kind of image that might be creating in certain people's minds, but understand that beer was a very common type of beverage in certain locales, as you can learn from many different sugyas in the Gemara, especially Rav Papa being a well-known beer manufacturer. So Rav Bevai, he drank beer, and as a result, Bayon Binsei Tafla. Now I don't know, Rashi says Bayon Binsei Tafla de Shecha Megadol Seor Ma'abes HaBosar. Beer drinking results in increased hair growth and thickening of flesh. Now, by translation of the Gemara, it seems that Rav Bevai was the beer drinker, and that resulted in his daughters requiring the depilatory, but it might very well be that Rav Bevai and his family, they all drank beer, and as a result of that, as Rashi says, that created an increased hair growth and thickening of flesh, and therefore the depilatory procedure wouldn't have the negative effects that others who are non-beer drinkers would experience. Anan, says Rav Nachman, but we, the lo shasinan shechor, we're not beer drinkers, lo bayon binsin tafla. Our daughters don't require that. And apparently this is where the Gentile in Rav Bevai's neighborhood, it seems from the context of the Gemara, said he wasn't a beer drinker, and therefore he made the mistake of thinking that his daughter would become beautiful through the depilatory, not understanding that the depilatory has the potential negative effects if you're a non-beer drinker. Well, he didn't realize that, and it wasn't by any stretch of the imagination that Rav Bevai had any responsibility in this Gentile's daughter's death. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Mark and Morris, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.